Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host Rico Muhammad. Be joined here shortly by my co-host Chuck Snow. I see he just popped in. That's a good thing. This week we are experiencing kind of what I've already predicted that was going to come down the pike as far as the rates were concerned. So let's jump into the show without any further ado. From the DAT trend lines perspective, we're showing that the national average price of diesel fuel is starting to slowly, incrementally creep downward, which is a good thing, showing that it crept down by 1.4 percentage points since this time last week, showing the national average price of diesel fuel right now is at $5.07 per gallon. Flatbed spot rates are up. Reefer and dry van rates are plummeting. The flatbed sector is the only equipment type behaving as we normally expect for this time of the year. As outside temperatures warm during the winter to spring transition, the flatbed freight market heats up also. No surprise there as rates continue to climb. The current flatbed market looks a lot like it did last year and in 2018 when the industrial economy was booming. In contrast, the dry van and reefer spot market rates are imploding and have dropped over 50 cents per mile already this year on average. So let's take a deeper dive and see exactly how those equipment types were performing, starting out with the dry van portion of the report. And we're showing that the starting out in the upper northeastern corridor for dry vans, that the average outbound spot market rate checks in at $2.85 per mile on average. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans is $2.93. Jumping up into the Midwest, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate averages at $3.28. Coming out of the South Central region, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.88. And coming out of the West Coast, closing out, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of 281. And where the flatbeds were concerned, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds coming out of the upper northeastern corridor at $3.48 per mile on average. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate for flatbeds at $3.61. Moving out of the Midwest, we're showing that that average rate checks in at $3.82. Moving out of the South Central region, that average outbound rate for flatbeds is at $3.31. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of an even $3 per mile. And checking in on the temperature-controlled or reefer portion of the report, starting out up in that upper northeastern corridor, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate checks in at $3.15 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate at $3.04. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate checking in at $3.87. Coming out of the South Central region, we're showing an average outbound rate at $3.45. And coming out of the West Coast, wrapping up the report, showing an average outbound rate at $3.12 per mile. And without any further ado, let me welcome in my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, is that you? I hope that's you.
You got him. How are you, Rico?
I'm doing well, Chuck, and how about yourself?
Good, good. You know what? I was scrambling today, and I always try to call in 5 minutes earlier, and it just didn't work. It was there was stuff going on in the office, and on the way home, it was just one of those things. But I did make it just in time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love it. It's kind of in the same predicament myself, out and about. But the great thing about being able to do the podcast the way that we have it set up is we can just about pull it off from anywhere if we As long as we got an internet connection and a couple of phone lines, we can just about pull it off.
Well, we did it. You know what? The last carrier roundtable program we did it from Interstate 65 between Nashville and Louisville. And my cousin was driving, and I was sitting there doing the podcast. It was wonderful, and it was a great podcast, too.
Right, right. So we have a special guest on with us this evening as well. Won't you tell us a little bit about our guest, and we'll introduce him and bring him up and on board to join us. It's always may not be the sexiest topic in the world, but we definitely a topic that we definitely have to get into, especially for us guys that are looking to try to grow our fleets and things that we need to be conscious of when it comes time to make those transitions. The most important probably the aspect of growing your fleet is safety. So tell us a little bit about our guest.
100%. Well, I've known John Farquhar for years. He was the safety and compliance director for two really good insurance companies that we were with. And then when they made a switch, John, I had decided to go on his own and start up Summit Safety, Summit Solutions, Risk Solutions, and he's done a great job, as he always does. John is a consummate professional when it comes to safety and compliance. He knows the business. He's not just a suit. John drove a truck. He understands truck, and he's the sort of guy that you can't, you know, the reason the insurance companies love him is because nobody can pull the wool over his eyes. He knows his stuff. And with no further ado, let's welcome John Farquhar.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for the intro.
Fantastic. And, how are you, buddy?
I'm not bad. I'm trying to stay out of trouble. And, you know, I want to prove Rico wrong. I think we can make safety sexy. There's no doubt.
Well, if you don't have a, you know what, if you don't have a culture of safety and compliance, you're not going to be in business, you know. I don't know.
Exactly.
You know, that's just what it is. There's just no way. We're in trucking. I was thinking about something tonight, and it started with wearing my brokerage hat for a minute, and a couple times a year, when we have some sort of a break check week or a few days of break check or whatever, there's one coming up, I think, next month or the month after, Safety Blitz. And there's a lot of very small carriers that just pull the trucks off the road, believe it or not, during that period of time. And I was thinking about it today because all of a sudden, what happens when we have those three days or 5 day safety blitzes, a whole bunch, and I mean thousands of trucks get pulled off the road. And it makes it very hard to move product. But what I was thinking about is, what the heck is going on in these people's brain if you're operating a truck that can't stand up to even the most rigorous of inspections? You shouldn't be operating that truck. It's not safe. And you're going to, if something happens, and even if it's not your fault, it becomes your fault if your brakes are out of adjustment or you got a bunch of freight airlines or you've got bad tires or whatever it is. That spring could be 100 things. So I don't understand the mindset behind it. You know, I look at it as a challenge. My equipment better stand up to a scale. You know, years ago, and John, I think you came from the same neighborhood I did. We used to always go around the scales because we were illegal. We didn't have authority. Mm-hmm. It's not that our trucks weren't safe. We just didn't have the authority back in the old days. This is all different. And that was a totally different era. It's long gone. That's when people were fighting to insure you. Now you're begging people to insure you. It's the total opposite. What's your thought on that, John?
Yeah, well, you know what, from the insurance perspective now, you know, the begging and whatnot, it's now you got to prove how good you are to be insured by a number of these top companies. They're looking for the cream of the crop. They're looking for the best of the best. They're tired of dealing with these guys that are cutting corners, you know. So kind of going in the direction of the maintenance issues, you know, getting ready for these blitzes, these roadside inspection processes and whatnot, these guys pulling it off the road. It's all money. It's what it is. It's all money. They know they're running shoddy equipment, and they think they can make more money by not maintaining the vehicle. I unfortunately have had the opportunity to go see some of these type operations, and usually when you go in, it's not hard to see it right away. Their carrier profiles are not doing well. You kind of look at their equipment when you're pulling into the yard and go, oh, God, that's not very favorable looking. And you get a sense of the culture right off the bat. So there's so many negative aspects playing in. And their thought process is, well, why would I want to be safe? It costs me money. You know, I'm better off to just run around the scales and cheat this and cheat that, and I can put more money in my pocket. The sad part is, if they really worked it and thought about it, you could make more money by being safe, by being profitable, putting into play good maintenance practices on your vehicles. All that is going to help dictate towards a good, positive company culture. And there's tons of good that comes out of that culture. I can improve my retention rate of my drivers because they want to stay. I'm going to make more money because I can keep the trucks moving because they're well-maintained. I don't have to worry about downtime. I can have better customer service. Therefore, customers are going to be willing to pay a little more to get that good service from you. And when I can start making more money, I can start paying people better. And, you know, it just makes for an all-around good operation. And your carrier profiles improve. And when your carrier profiles improve, law enforcement has a tendency to back off and go, yeah, you know what, you're doing all right. I don't need to deal with you. I'm going after the guys that keep going around the scale.
Yeah, yeah. They're, you know what? Those guys are, they're sitting at the window of that chicken coop. They punch in your number, your DOT number, MC number. And if you're a guy that's got a clean record and never a problem, they don't want you. They don't want to waste your time or their time. They want the guy that's, you know, they want the bad guys.
Yes.
The guy that's got,
yes,
where they know they're going to find stuff.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know what, and it's not hard to tell what's going on. You know, like if you're monitoring your SMS profile properly, you're going to find out that one of the big key areas on that SMS TSA profile is your ISS, your inspection selection system. That number dictates to the U.S. DOT, Chicken House and whatnot, that when you roll across the plate, they punch in your DOT number or the camera picks up your plate number and pulls up on the screen. The officer right away gets a first view ISS number, which gives him an indication, are you good or are you poor? And that's going to dictate whether we're going to pull you around the back and strip search you, or we're going to just let you roll across the plate and carry on, driver, have a nice day.
You know, why are they going to pull somebody in that they know is a great operator? They
exactly.
Don't want, they're
exactly.
Looking. Exactly. You know what? Even if in some of those states where maybe they have quotas, you're going to be working against them if you're a great operator, because they're not going to find any.
Yep. Yeah, well, interesting enough, I actually had an enforcement officer tell me one time. He said, oh, no, we don't have quotas. We can write as many tickets as we want.
And some of them do.
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, you know, and some of these officers have been in the trucking industry before. You know, so
yeah,
you're not going to pull the wool over their eyes. They've been truck drivers or truck operators, and they've moved into, you know, roadside enforcement officers and stuff like that. So, you know, they know what they're looking for. And there's a lot of good officers out there that are going to take the time and educate you as a driver and give you insight and help you understand what you need to do. And I always encourage a driver, when you get that opportunity, be very respectful and thankful for that opportunity. Listen to him, because even if you've done something wrong, he's going to educate you and more than likely not going to give you a violation. But as soon as you copy the attitude and try to show, you know, hide stuff, he's going to start getting his book out and pencil and start writing you tickets.
John, I've seen it firsthand. You know, I grew up in an era where you always respected an officer, where, you know, whether it was DOT or a cop, that was the era that I grew up in. And I remember years ago I was going through the Iowa scale coming eastbound, and years ago back when they had a crazy length law, and even with a 45-footer and a cab over, if you didn't snug it right up, which sometimes it just was so, you know, you had a guy sleeping in the back, and that would be an awful experience trying to snug that thing up while the guy's sleeping. It was better off to go in, and you just paid a, I think you paid a $15 fine / overlength permit. It was pretty cheap, and it was just easier for it was easy for your co-driver to get some rest, you know, rather than do that. And I'll never forget going in there one morning, and there was a beat up old International cab over, and there was a young kid in there, and I wasn't very old. I was probably 25 or so, but he was younger than me, and he looked pretty rough. Like, you know, he probably needed a bath and a haircut and, you know, clean clothes. But he looked just like the truck. And you know, his nickname should have been Pigpen. I don't know whether it was or wasn't, but it would have suited him. He was pretty dirty looking. And he's arguing with this DOT officer. And every time, I just bought the permit. I wasn't in there for 2 minutes. And every time this guy would talk back, this guy would say, I'm going to write you up for that. That's going to be another $50.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think while I was in there, it cost the guy about $300. Okay, and the guy wasn't, and I wasn't about to get into it and tell the guy to shut up. But, you know, that was just such a experience watching somebody. And Rico and I have talked about it on the show several times. It's really important. Somebody has about 30 seconds to make their first opinion, okay? The best the impression they're going to have of you. They got about 30 seconds, and they're going to eyeball you. The first thing they're going to do is they eyeball your truck, as you know. And I've given our own guys hell for this during the years. Now, I think our culture, everybody understands the rules now after many years, but having a bunch of papers in the windshield, you know, that's a no-no. That's a red flag. And then how you're dressed. Do not be dressed in short pants, a muscle shirt, and a pair of beach thongs or shower thongs and go into the chicken coop. You look like an idiot. And you're going to come out with a ticket, even if you didn't do anything. You're getting a ticket because you look like an idiot. So look, you know, if you really need to wear short pants, which I don't think personally look very respectable, but that's my own hang up. For God's sake, get a pair of dress shorts if you really insist on it.
Yeah.
And don't look like you're going to the beach. Why do you want to get a ticket for nothing? You know, and I've actually seen that happen a couple times. I had it happen to one of our drivers years ago, who got into a huge argument with the DOT guy. And sure enough, he had he didn't have thongs on. He had sandals and his short soccer shorts and a muscle shirt. And he looked like he was 9 months pregnant, about to give birth in my office.
Well, you know what? The dress attire is all about you extending your attitude and your personality, right? So, you know, if I want to look professional, I'm going to dress professional. But if I really don't care about myself, highly unlikely I care about my job or my position or my responsibility. So that's all going to dictate, you know. And the same thing flows back. So let's go back to talking just a second about the trucks that are bypassing the scales. That is your culture bleeding out. They go, wow, you don't care. You don't look after your equipment. It shows.
Right.
That is your personality and your company attitude there. So you've got this very poor culture. I'm pretty sure we can kind of do a snapshot that when we look at a company like that and do a review and evaluation of how their practices are, we'll find out it's not just the maintenance practices that are shoddy. Probably their hiring practices are crap. You know, they don't have any proper safety protocols or practices in place there. There'll be all kinds of things that you could just shoot a shotgun through and not even hit anything because there's so many holes.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I think that safety is like, that's our business, really, when you think of it. Our business on the carrier side, and even on the broker side, because the brokers have to use good carriers. And the carriers, as carriers, we need to police ourselves properly, because we need to be able to buy insurance from a good company. Not some C-rated company that gives you a pink slip. And that goes on a lot these days. You know, and brokers are starting to wisen up to this, the good brokers, the ones that pay their bills. So, you know, the TIA giving out instructions.
I'm going to ask a question out there for some of our guys and girls that are listening. What are some things that some simple, maybe some simple steps that people can do to begin to implement a really good safety culture? How do they, you know, maybe they might have an idea, but I was listening to something earlier today that talked about, especially when you're a one-truck trolley or one-truck operation, you know what I'm saying, you understand, but if you are thinking about trying to grow a company or something like that, how do you implement a or get a system in place so that it's something that's kind of plug and play and you don't have to think about it as much? You have a system in place and it begins to kind of take care of itself.
Right. So the unfortunate aspect, there really is no, you know, golden key or golden program per se, because everybody operates slightly different, each entity. You know, even if you're just a one-truck operation, you might be doing flatbed versus drive-in versus reefer, versus any other type of product that you're hauling. So what type of protocols you put in place are going to be different with everybody, and then your customer relations are going to be a little different as well. Your basics are going to be the same, right? Your regulatory requirements. So I always tell people, you're a truck driver first, and now you become an owner-operator, and now you become a company owner. I've got my own authority. I've gotten insurance and whatnot, and, wow, I really don't have any practices or anything in place. The first place I send them, the FMCSR booklet, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. There's the Bible right there. That will help you set yourself up with no problem at all. And it's very easy to read, very easy to follow, and 90% of what you have to do is documentation. You know, so as simple as putting together a driver qualification file. You know, the FMCSA will provide you guidance on what's required in that driver qualification file. We need to have an application. You know, we need to have reference checks. So, hey, I'm the only guy here. I get to reference myself. This is pretty easy. You know, we need to do a road test. Well, I'm the only guy, so I guess I can validate myself. But if I bring on an employee, well, hey, I need to validate that person, whether it be an owner, operator, or driver. So without getting into all the details, that's probably the best area to go to get the most information from a compliance standpoint. From there, I like to go back to school and use a phrase that I learned in school, and I try to share this with as many people as I can, the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? So, hey, I want to be treated with respect. Well, I need to treat others with respect, whether it be a new customer, whether it be my broker, my insurance broker, my insurance agent, my insurance provider, people I buy my trucks with, get my truck serviced with. When you can basically show people that you're very respective, you're professional, it doesn't take long for word to get out there that, wow, this guy's good. You know, he's really polite to people, and people want to work with you more. So you might have even a service provider who provides your maintenance to go, I like dealing with him. You know what? He's really respectful. He understands my time. I'm willing to bend over for that guy. Whereas this guy over here is a real butthead. I'm tired of dealing with him. You know, so part of that, you know, that attitude persona, I guess, is what's going to help you start that culture.
You know what? It's funny you say that, John. It reminds me of the word integrity, which comes from, I believe it's a Greek or Latin word, which means wholeness. You can't, if you have integrity, you don't just treat your customers nicely, you treat your your suppliers with the same respect because you need them both.
Exactly.
You know, you can't be a bully to every supplier but really nice to your customers, because you're going to forget who's who one day, number one. Number two, you're not going to have – I think you hit the nail on the head. If you work with your suppliers, when your suppliers are having challenges or you're having a challenge, you work together as a partner. I know that we have some phenomenal partners that I can call on for all sorts of things. You know, the people that were contracted with Transmec that look after mechanical stuff with the trucks and trailers, sometimes stuff happens on a Sunday night. And, you know, you have an airbag blow out of a trailer. 6 o'clock on a Sunday night, and the driver's trying to leave to take out his trip. We can call them, and, you know, they will send over somebody from their house on Sunday night to open up a shop and fix an airbag. That comes from having an incredible partnership, and it's partnership all over. You can't, you know, you cannot lie to your insurance company and tell them that you never go to New York and New Jersey when you go there all the time, because the second they find out, you're gone. You know, when you're gone, and John, I think you'll vouch for this, if you usually get fired from an insurance company as a client, the other insurance companies find out about it.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. You know, you get the letters of experience that insurance companies are always looking for and whatnot. That becomes a big issue. So
I think just doing things right. John, on Rico's question, is it a good idea? I think it would be. Tell me what you think. With somebody starting out and they make that transition from one truck to that second truck, so they don't really have as much control as they did when they were driving the truck themselves. So now they're taking a larger risk, of course, but risk equals reward. But what about getting a safety consultant to come in and just, you know, it's not cheap, but it's cheaper than doing it wrong, and set up all your files, and even having them, if they're not set up properly, make sure they're set up properly. So you do it once, they show you the system. This is where you keep this file. These are these files. This is where, you know, if you have, you know, if a driver gets a ticket or hits something, you've got to sit down and you've got to have that meeting with them. All those things you have to keep. Those files that people don't, you know, a lot of times, like if I look where trucking companies stem from, they stem from owner operators, they stem from truck drivers, and sometimes mechanics.
Yeah.
Those are the three areas. Of course, farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a big transition when you go from one truck to two trucks. All of a sudden, your risk, it more than doubles, because you don't know what that second person's like.
So true, so true. And that becomes a challenge, because I find so many guys, you know, they'll be a driver, they'll transition to an owner-operator, and then they become the company owner now all of a sudden, right? And the sad part is they think that, I've been driving truck for 5 years. I know it. I know what it needs to be. I've never had a ticket or anything like that, you know, and now all of a sudden they think they know the rules when they really don't. They don't know what's going on. So you're exactly right. A safety consultant can help get you set up. The trick is making sure that as a company owner, you don't put all that reliance on the safety consultant to just do it for you. You need to understand what they're doing on your behalf, because regardless of what happens, you as the company owner are fully responsible. Don't think that you can extend your liability and say, it wasn't me that did it. It was a safety consultant, so it's his
fault. That's not
good, No, they have no liability in this whatsoever, you know, because you're the ultimate owner of the company.
But you know what? At the same time, and I realize that some of the men and women out there that are going to start out and make that transition to that second truck and try to build from there. There's areas to cut costs, and hiring safety consultants isn't one of them. you know,
yes.
I would make sure I would spend the extra and get a real good one. Because bad advice is going to, somebody sets your files up incorrectly and something happens and you think that they're right and you've been doing it wrong all these years, the DOC doesn't care.
No, they don't. So, you know, it comes back to anything. You know, if I'm gonna work with a service provider of some sort, even if it's a maintenance guy, get some reference. You know, get some referrals on how good the service they work. Same thing with a safety consultant. Don't just rely on the fact that the guy's hung a shingle out and says, "Yeah, I do safety services. I can help you out." Ask for some references. If they're good at what they do, they will not have any problem sharing with you some names, some reputable customers to get a good rapport to be able to say, "Oh yeah, you want to work with that guy. He really helped me out. He did this. Awesome. Great stuff. Awesome stuff. Prices are decent and he really cares about what he does." That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, I agree. You know, check out who all your partners are, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that call themselves safety consultants that will, they'll make a mess of stuff for you.
Oh yes, unfortunately, yeah.
You know, I've heard about
it. It doesn't take long.
Happening.
It's harder to clean it up after you've done something. So yeah.
Well, you know what? What the stories I've heard is you think you're doing everything right, and then you have that audit. Either you had so many fines, or you're involved in a very serious wreck. They come in, and you think your rear end is covered. And they start looking through the files, and all of a sudden they go, no, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And they end up, you know, you could end up just everything is there, but it's just not really right. And you could end up with a conditional or unsatisfactory rating.
Oh, big time, very quickly. And as soon as that happens, your insurance company wants to ditch you like a hot potato.
Yeah. You better have a real good reason if you don't have a satisfactory rating. What's going on now with audits? I hear that what happened to all these desktop audits that FMCSA is supposed to do? Is that happening?
I've heard of a number of them going on. It's been quiet. You know, there's not been any huge announcements or anything like that. But I've actually heard of a couple of people through the grapevine and whatnot that have had some, and you know, it's basically a virtual, kind of like a bit of a Zoom meeting.
Right.
Same thing's happening here in Canada. You know, with in Ontario, we've got the Ministry of Transportation. Those guys are doing Zoom meeting audits and whatnot. And I think there's opportunity here because it cuts down a lot of travel time, a lot of inconvenience.
Oh my God.
You know, providing you with, say, like a Google account or something like that, where they'll say, "Here, drop your documents in here, and we'll review it, and then we'll come back to you with any questions we have, and carry on." So it's almost like they're there, but it's actually a little less evasive, because it's like, "Yeah, just load this up in here, and then I'll go away, do my thing, and I'll get back to you in a day or two." So, you know, save them sitting in your office for days on end.
Yeah, you know, much better system. Now, I thought they had hired a bunch of officers and they were going to be pretty robust. Maybe they are. My understanding, John, you would know better than anybody. My understanding is that truck fatalities are way up. And, you know, maybe that's where the desktop audits are being done, in just auditing the aftermath of these fatalities.
Yeah, there's some of that, you know, complement to the pandemic. We've seen, less traffic on the highway, which has caused highway speeds to increase. And I think it's all over the news, media, and whatnot. We're hearing that. So when you increase speed, what do you get? Well, you get more disastrous crashes. So the consequences become much larger. We end up with more fatalities, less injuries, and it's really unfortunate, you know.
Well, you know what? Speed number one, number two. There are, I think we have an epidemic throughout the continent of distracted drivers.
Oh, huge! You're spot on. It is a big epidemic by all means. It's really unfortunate. you know, our cell phones and all kinds of billboards and whatnot to look at, that just, yeah, your attention is really taken off the task of driving.
Well, I don't think it, I don't think the billboards are a problem. I've always enjoyed them personally, but it's the, I think the distractions in a vehicle, you know, you've got all these, you know, when I think of the first trucks I drove, you had a small handful of gauges.
Yep.
And now you look at the number of gauges and you've got your satellite tracking, you got your GPS. We were talking about this the other day. You know, we used to read a map and you would say, okay, I know I've got to go, I've got to go along, Interstate 90 until exit 491 or whatever it is, go south. And you know that that's going to be in 100 miles and you know you're good for 2 hours. And then you pull off and you might look at your directions or your map again. Where today you are, you're looking at the map on your device. You're listening to it. You've got all these other things, and I really do think it's playing havoc. What is the law with CDL drivers while they're driving an 18-wheeler with telephone headsets on?
It's a hands-free device, so it's totally legal.
Same as
totally legal.
Totally legal.
Yep. Yeah, it's all about having your hands on the wheel, not holding a device in your hand and distracting your attention. The sad part is, as we know, even with that headset on, that conversation can be just as deadly, if not even more so, than holding the phone in your hand. You know, you're distracted. Your conversation is going to distract you from the task of operating that motor vehicle, paying attention out the window.
Yeah, because... you know what? Things happen in the blink of a
millisecond. Yeah.
They really do. You know, I met a guy at Matt, came by the booth, and I knew him, and he had just gone through, and he was a large guy, he was a big guy. He was probably, I'm going to guess, 250 pounds, and he had just had a front tire blowout on him. And he said it took every bit of strength. So, you know, he's like 75 pounds more than I am. And and he said it took every bit of strength and weight he had to keep that truck straight with a front tire blowout.
Yep, I believe it.
And you know what? He said, I just caught it. Had I been on the phone or something, especially had I had a phone in my hand, I would have lost that truck.
So true. Well, and unfortunately, I don't think drivers are thinking in that fashion anymore, because a lot of these new trucks are so easy to drive. They're just like driving your car. You know, automatic transmission, power steering. It's got all the comforts of home. You can sit in here, and then you get a lot of these telematics devices that are giving you the cameras, your ELD, you're getting feedback through a telematics device, you know, your phone's propped up there, your GPS is in the window, all these things are going on. And you're thinking, this is no different than driving down the road in my car, but you're so spot on, anything can happen, and now all of a sudden, you're fighting for your life.
A question I would propose is, we're talking about all of this stuff, and we're talking about safety as well. And I know it's a hot button issue with a lot of our listeners and a lot of just regular drivers that are out there. But the issue of both direction cameras, cab facing, inward cab facing, and outward cab facing. And we're talking about building a culture of safety. And I'm just curious, from an insurance standpoint, how soon is something like that going to be kind of mandatory? Would that become a mandatory situation?
We're actually seeing it now, Rico. Some insurers are already demanding that in order to have a policy with X number insurance company, you have to have cameras in the vehicle. this no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing is mostly the focus is in forward-facing cameras. They're not
right.
so much getting on board to say it's got to be dual-facing. I'm an advocate for both, but also at the same time, it's what is the true purpose of what you want to do with the footage? What are you looking to do? If I want to be able to exonerate a driver with a forward-facing camera just to be able to say, no, that wasn't his fault for that crash, then, you know, I can get away with a forward-facing camera. But if I'm having a lot of crashes that I can't get answers to with the forward-facing footage, and I'm thinking something's going on behind the wheel, and I want to know more about it, then I'm seeing companies that are turning that camera on, looking into the cab, and they're wanting to know. And that's where we're starting to see a lot of distraction issues, a lot, you know, and it's just crazy.
There's a video floating
around. Guys watching movies while they're driving.
Well, there's a video floating around on social media right now. I seen it the other day with a gentleman behind the wheel of the truck, and he dozes off. And unfortunately, right as he dozes off, there's two vehicles on the shoulder of the road. I think they're maybe fixing a flat tire or something. And as he's going down the highway, he sideswipes one of the vehicles while he's going down the road. As he's coming up, he dozes off. And initially, he said that the right tire had blew out. And as a company, if you're a company owner, or you're trying to grow your fleet, or you got someone else in that truck, and your driver comes up with a convenient argument, if you don't have the camera to, even though it didn't exonerate the driver, but as the owner, then you're talking about a maintenance issue on a truck that, okay, versus it being just the liability of the driver. You know, I'm not trying to create a us versus them situation, but if you own a company and you're hiring drivers and you have drivers in your vehicles, I think that this is something that we have to, as owners of fleets, we have to be thinking more cognizant of that situation coming on board. And no matter you think you may be hiring the best drivers in the world, and hopefully you are, but you still, you know, kind of have to have that insurance to kind of protect yourself and your company.
Oh, big time. Well, look, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when we talked about, you know, you're giving the keys to a guy and down the road he goes, and, you know, you may never hear from him again. You're hoping he'll stop at a payphone and call into dispatch once in a while to say, you know, hey, here's where I am. Well, nowadays we've got so much technology we can actually track where that vehicle is. So when it comes to a trust issue of, you know, with the cameras and you get drivers that get pushback, I like to go, well, if you're the best driver, why don't you show me you're the best driver? And I'm not going to watch you in the camera, but if you do something incorrectly or illegal, the camera, the artificial intelligence in there is going to pick that up and it's going to send me an alert. If I never get an alert, I know I got a really good driver here. So I like to say, Mr. Driver, prove to me why I don't need that camera on.
Yeah, the camera box, exactly.
You know,
my understanding is the way the heavy truck insurance is moving, nobody within the next, I would say, 36 months, by 36 months from now, nobody will insure a Class 8 vehicle without an inward-facing camera of some type.
Oh, I can
coming.
See that. Yep, I agree.
It's coming because these guys are so... they are so tired of losing money. And you know, it reminds me, you know, when you go into those bars out in Alberta and they have those bulls in the bar, the electric bulls,
mm-hmm.
or whatever they call them. And guys will have a couple of beers and they get on these bulls and they get thrown off. And there's always four other idiots standing waiting to give it a try. And unfortunately, sometimes truck insurance is like that, and different companies will want to try their hand. These guys don't know what they're doing. They're losing money. We're going to write truck insurance. we can get $20,000 a policy. We'll make a fortune. We'll sell a million policies. And then all of a sudden they're in it for 3 months and they've had billions of dollars of losses. And they're just like the guys running those electric bulls in the taverns there. They run away, and there's only a handful of good insurance companies in North America, Canada and the U.S., of good ones that insure Class 8 vehicles. And that is why, because my understanding is that they're getting fed up. Even with their good carriers, with the best drivers and the best of protocols, because they're having issues not so much with their customers, but the nuclear settlements that come out of nowhere.
Yes. Oh, big time.
And that's where somebody has really, and I've heard countless stories of one of our carriers that's based, I think they're based in Ohio, one of their drivers hit a woman, and she lost her life. She was on the wrong, and this is without a word of lies, word of God, she was on the wrong side of the road. They did an autopsy. The woman was driving an SUV or a pickup truck. She had gone to his side of the road, so he instinctively went to the other side of the road not to hit her. And he hit the corner of her, or she hit the corner of his truck. And it was proven that she was drunk. She had twice the amount of alcohol in her system than what's legally allowed. And she had been smoking marijuana on top of it. And I'm not making this up. The truck insurance company still paid $600,000.
Yep.
Because it was, you know what, path of least resistance. Let's make this, it'll cost us $600,000. Let's just make this go away now. And it's not $100 million. But please thank you. And that's the sort of stuff that makes truck insurance very expensive.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. You know, and you know, on my side of the desk here, I would probably say that those motor carriers that are grumbling the loudest about insurance premiums and can't afford this and can't afford that are probably the operators that are having the most incidents and crashes. And they need to really sit down and look at how much they're blowing out the pipe here on crashes and deductibles, and then looking at how much premium they're paying, they'll find out that, they're spending more in crash costs and whatnot than they are in premiums. And then they're wondering why they're getting a hike. You know, the good carriers are going, you know what, premiums are going up, it's hurting, there's no doubt. But they're doing a much better job at managing it, you know, taking on a higher self-insured retention, deductibles and whatnot, doing better programs to reduce the number of crashes and whatnot, driver training, driver education and coaching. All these things are going to make a difference. But those that grumble the loudest are going to be doing the least.
You know what? And the other thing is, John, they're hiring the right people to begin with. You know, and unfortunately, in this market, there is a we have a shortage, and some people get really upset when I say this. There is a shortage of available drivers. And it's not, you know, it's just the way it is. And because of that, there's a lot of pressure, especially with the cost of new equipment or newer equipment. And a lot of people have taken a chance and expanded post-pandemic and bought brand new equipment, and they need drivers to drive that equipment. And of course you need, you know, you need to have decent equipment to attract decent drivers, but you know, there reaches a point where you can't get even decent drivers with good equipment because there's just not a lot available. Good drivers, real good drivers, don't usually switch their jobs. They don't move. They're happy. They're doing a good job. They're good drivers. Then you get
they're looking to retire.
Yes, exactly. You have these other ones, and you know who they are right away. They've had four jobs in the last year. Now, and it's always the same story. Well, that guy ripped me off. and that guy didn't pay me, and that guy, you know, it's always the other guy's fault. And if you look at their work history, they've spent the last 30 years working for guys that ripped them off. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
You know, and you hire those guys or you hire somebody that is inexperienced, and you're so frustrated. You've got to get that equipment out earning because you're making huge monthly payments on it. And the bank manager's crawling up your rear end telling you you better start making some payments. so then you all of a sudden you put people that shouldn't be behind the wheel. And you know what? Maybe those people would be okay in another environment where they could drive a little bit and get some extra training and drive a little bit and get some more training. You know, the likes of, apparently they don't do it anymore, but Schneider Transport up in Green Bay had an incredible school going on there. And, you know, in some of these large carriers, I know up in Canada here, Bison still does it, and they have a Challenger does it, and they actually take new drivers, and then they put them through their program.
Yeah.
And they get some great talent. You know, they make it themselves, but that's hard for small carriers. You know, if you don't have a couple hundred trucks, you're not going to have that program.
No, it's hard because you just don't have the resources for it, right? But it's something you need. So you're challenged as a small carrier to make sure that you hire a more experienced driver. But again, those experienced drivers just don't exist anymore. They're happy where they are, or they've already retired and gotten out of it. We're even seeing young people now that have no desire to be in the trucking industry because of, you know, the long hours. You know, I'm away from home and I want to start a family. I've gotten married and my wife wants me home. You know, families become very important. And unfortunately, if you're running, you know, even if you're running a medium long haul where you leave on a Sunday or a Monday and you get home Friday, you know, hard to have a social life with your family, let alone friends. So young people are so social now anymore, you know, whether it be face-to-face or even on their phones, but they want to spend all their time socializing. They're not interested in being away from home this long.
You know, it's really you're really, when you're trucking, you work all day, you work, you work long hours, and then you go and try to find a place to park. And and I say try because, there's such a huge shortage of parking spots, especially in the States, but we have in Canada, even though we're such a big country, we have a shortage of parking spots.
Yep.
I think our American friends will laugh at that one. but then on top of that, you're finished for the day. What are you going to do? You know, at best, you're going to go into a truck stop, which aren't really, for the most part, a lot of them aren't truck stops like we knew. And if they are, they're crowded, and you're not going to be able to park there anyway. They fill up at 6 o'clock, and if you're going to run till 9 or 10, good luck trying to find a parking spot at 10 o'clock at night.
Yes,
you know, and that's why I think we've done a horrible job. I think that I think there's been a lack of planning when we started this whole ELD thing. I think what we should have done first was we should have fixed the parking problem, and then fixed the waiting at docks was, and there's a Democrat, but he could be Republican. It was a senator or Congress. I don't even know that he was a politician from Peter DeFano, I think his name was, or a name like that. Rico, you may be able to correct me on that. And he was from Oregon.
DeFazio.
That's right, Peter DeFazio. Now, unfortunately, he's left politics, or he's leaving politics, but he was really the trucker's champion. He was talking about truck parking and detention, driver detention at box, you know, and let's get this straightened out before we start the DLD years ago. And we did that. We were in such a hurry to implement the whole ELD thing, which is fine. You know what? Because we no longer get fines for form and manner on logbooks. So
it's gone with ELD. That's not even a focus anymore. Yeah,
exactly.
I've actually heard of one company who
is working internally to try and help their drivers with parking spaces, and they do a lot of LTL across the northern states, right over to the northwest corner. And interesting enough, what they've done is they've created relationships and partnerships with a bunch of cartage companies. So instead of doing all the deliveries themselves, what they're doing is they're dropping their cargo at these cartage companies, and then the cartage guys are doing all the deliveries. Well, part of the agreement they've made is, hey, if I need space, could you allow my driver to park in your yard so he could sleep for the night and get some rest? And a lot of them are like, yeah, no problem. Come on, we got lots of room, and there's a restaurant across the roadway. You can get a bite to eat or something. You've got to think outside the box here to be able to do this. So, you know, if you're a carrier and you're brokering freight to other carriers, I've been trying to cut some opportunity deals here and say, hey, guys, is there a chance we could work together here? Like, I got a big yard. Your guys could come in. If you can't find truck space, you could park in my yard. And, you know, give us a heads up who's coming. Like, we got a secure facility and all these things. You're not going to get the government to act to put in more rest areas and, you know, throw funding out there to build more truck stops. This is not going to happen, but we've got tons of truck yards with lots of truck parking. If these guys would work together, which is, well, I think that's something totally new for trucking companies. If you could do that, you could help solve your own problem.
Exactly. You know, this is interesting. And this was pre-pandemic. Do you know what it costs a truck stop to have a parking spot per day? The truck stop
I heard something about this, and I can't remember what it was, but
this is pre-pandemic, so I don't know how much it is now with inflation. It's $20 a day.
$20 a day per parking spot?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, that takes into consideration, I guess, the rent and the maintenance.
Yep.
Has to be swept.
No doubt. Yep.
You know, in the winter, you know.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, it may have to be plowed.
Yep, sure.
Somebody's got to go around, unfortunately, to pick up garbage.
Yep, that's a lot of money.
It is.
Well, and the sad part is if you're pulling in to use a parking spot, but you're not going in to use any of the services, you go in to use the washroom and you come back out, you know, you park for the night, but you don't go buy a meal, you don't buy anything from the store, you don't buy any fuel, you're not helping to support that truck stop to stay there.
Exactly. But, you know, some of the truck stops have done it to themselves because they have a really lousy venue of foods. You know, they have Subway and Kentucky Fried Chicken and, you know, things like that. The guys that are still alive want to eat better than that. And then you have the ethnic drivers who won't eat that, you know, they will not eat that stuff. They bring their food from home, which I don't blame them. Because they don't want to eat it. And maybe they'll buy fuel there, and maybe they'll have a shower there, but they're certainly not going to have a meal. And it's not like the old days, the truck stops that we went to. We got a great meal.
Yeah. Well, and this is
it has gotten away from us. But before we get out of here, I want to give John an opportunity to tell our listeners how he may be able to assist and help them out and where they can find him. So, John, the floor is yours.
Perfect. Yeah. So you can look me up on the good old great interweb. I have my website is summitrisksolutions.ca. My phone number is 226-802-2762. You can email me at john@summitrisksolutions.ca. And we can pretty much help out anybody. I always like to say I can help you out as long as you're willing to help yourself. And we can get you back on your feet if that's the case.
You know what? John does great work. I'll vouch for him. I've done business with him for many years. And I've sent other people to John that were having problems. And he put them on the right path with setting things up properly. So they're totally in compliance.
Our focus is helping you to better understand how to help yourself. You know, we don't come in and do the job for you. We come in and teach you how to do the job so that way you can own the responsibility. And you, as a company owner and your staff and whatnot, you can then have that great accolade, that achievement that, yes, we did this. We now can move forward with this. We know what we're doing and what we need to have in place all the time. And it's not just compliance, it's risk management.
We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on board with us and talk with us and explain a lot of these things to us. So guys and girls out there listening in, if you could use John's services, by all means, reach out and support those that support us. And so with that being said, John, we'd like to extend you again a very poignant thank you for taking time out to come on with us, Chuck. It's about that time, my friend.
Yep.
Let everyone know how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, you know what? Best way to get in touch with me, if you want to give me a call, 1-800-388-4352, my extension 203. You're going to need that, boys and girls, or you're never going to get through. We are getting we outgrew our phone system. It was built for about 200 people, and we're up to about 550, and this thing's just not doing what it should. You know, it's kind of like trying to pull 90,000 pounds up a hill with a 235 ton. It's not going to happen very easily. So we are getting a better phone system, but till then, make sure you punch in extension 203 or send me an email, just chuck@traffix.com. If you need to, if you want to get set up with Traffix, I'll gladly hold your hand and take you to the right office, depending on what you're looking for and where you're located. I'll introduce you to the branch manager and the director of that particular office. And if you want, send me a private message on Instagram at Chuck Snow CEO. And John, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. And Rico, if you want to throw your flashers on and back her in this hole here, it right next to the Werner truck, looks empty. I think we can fit.
All righty. Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you guys, the listeners, for taking time out of your schedule to listen to us, whether you're listening live or you're listening to a download. We greatly appreciate it. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us, and we're always grateful for you doing so. So until the next time, stay safe out there. Stay healthy. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and God willing, we'll talk at the same time, same place next week. God bless you, and good night.
Catch you on the flip-flop.